Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
What's good, internet? Welcome to Waypoint Radio, episode 167. It is hot out, and I forgot how to do the intro to this podcast a second ago. So Patrick and I are laughing. It is July 2nd, 2018.
You're allowed to think it was still June. I mean,
yeah, I'm in the window. It's a Monday after the weekend where
the full week. Especially when the transition happens on a weekend, I feel like you get an extra amount of time to do that. It's weird that there used to be so much anxiety over signing checks, and I would mess up the year, but I haven't signed a check.
Oh, yeah.
When was the last time I signed a check?
Oh, I used to fuck up dates on checks all the time.
Actually, I stopped signing checks for a long-ass time, and then I've gotten back into checking because not everyone has, like, a Square app when they come to, like, do your plumbing.
Sure. You know what? Sure. Fair. And I'm not trying to, like, take out $250 of cash and just have it around sometimes. Yeah. Totally. Fair. It is just me and Patrick today because it is a holiday week. We mentioned this on a stream last week, but this week is going to be a little wild in terms of who's available. Me and Patrick will be around for the next couple of days, and then Danielle and Rob will be back for the latter half, and Kato is around too to do some tweeting, obviously, right now. Natalie will be around on and off all week, but it's going to be kind of a quiet week for us this week as we got the thing that's cool but also kind of weird in the world of media, where we got a last-minute email from our bosses that were like, oh yeah, y'all have Monday off too. Like, we already had Tuesday, Wednesday. Now we have Monday also, which is today, the day you're hearing this. And so me and Patrick's like, well, just slide that to another day. I'm going to kind of take days off throughout the week and just kind of be relaxed anyway. So we're just expect a little bit less from us, but not nothing.
Still
we got
stuff.
Some good stuff coming.
Yeah,
we still got some good stuff coming.
You streamed a vampire review to finish. I got
vampire right.
Hollow
I'm excited to read that
this weekend. Or,
yo, Hollow Knight's
morning.
Good.
It's a very good game.
So I started playing it last year on PC very briefly, and I got to like through the first boss, and I was like, this
you
is good.
Nemo.
I'm gonna wait for Switch. Yep. I'm gonna wait for Switch, and that was the right call because now I'm playing it in bed. I'm playing it on TV. I'm playing it on the subway, and that is like.
It very much it fits within like 20-minute spurts of
100%.
There's always some sort of micro or macro thing you can be accomplishing, even if you're not necessarily like fighting a boss or any sort of like major task.
You're just mapping stuff out. You're just dipping a little bit deeper into the dungeon. You're finding a new NPC. You're finding a new rest bench to sit at and kind of like making little bits of progress. How far in are you?
So the game doesn't gate in a way that it makes it difficult to talk about. Maybe this is something that will make more sense, like, as you and I get
as
further.
As we continue,
but it's,
yeah.
But it's not like, oh, like, I made it to the ice world, and it's like, oh, okay, that means you've done X, Y, and Z. And, well, like, yes, there is that kind of progression,
yeah,
but it's
some of it, right?
But it's, like, sort of difficult to, like, I'll say, the most recent boss that I fought was, well, that wasn't a boss, because that was a secret room I found.
Ooh.
But I fought the needle. Is that, or like the
wasp? The hornet.
Hornet.
It's like, Hornet's okay. Hornet, right? That's
Ant-Man,
a good
Ant-Man
fight.
And the wasp is throwing off all my terminology. the hornet's like one of the first major, like maybe the second major boss that you come across, but it's the first time you get a new ability in the game. And that's a great fight. It's very much about like understanding, that one is like very focused on. I mean, it's patterns, which is like a lot of Metroid game like fights work, especially boss fights work. But I forget, like, can you instigate like the dive from that character, or are you always just waiting for the dive
you can,
to happen?
I think if you're at the right distance from her, she'll do the dive. No, because she also has like the spear throw and the charge and stuff. So I think it's kind of like waiting for that dive and then figuring out like Oh, you know what? It's not the first ability you get, because by then I had the you have the magic shoot ability, right?
Oh, the first, right. Yes, the
you
laser
get, but
shot,
you get that
yeah.
traversal ability from her. You get that dash. But that laser shot was super important for me, because I would basically be just like, you know, every time I hit her, you're gaining mana or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I'd be like, trying to lure her into doing that bad dive where it's easy for me to get behind her, charging up and then blasting, you know, when she's at range. And that was just a really fun fight. And in general, I'm just having a great time exploring the world. I think it's one of the most charming games I've played in a while. It's really fun to play a game that has that touch. We've talked about this in terms of Metroid, we talked about this in terms of Dark Souls, but it also has this touch of like of charm and likability that I don't know that either of those games go for. And the thing that I love about it is I can tell it's all gonna fucking fall apart. You can tell that there is like some
there's
dark
something
shit
going
you're up
on
to
here. Yeah. There's a lot of indications along the margins that like you may be indiscriminately killing things that maybe
yeah.
you shouldn't.
Yeah, maybe you're the bad guy. And
I'll be curious to see like what that turn is, because like it's happening. Yes. Like the indications are happening so early, and I know this yeah. game is extremely long. Like
it's like 40 like, hours or something, right?
It's yeah, especially if you're. It's like 40 hours if you're just kind of going through it, and then it's okay. like a whole lot longer if you want to do everything.
100% it or
and
whatever.
And then there's two
right.
DLCs, and then there's right. Like arena modes that and like challenge stuff that you can do that like yeah. you know I like someone in the chat this morning when I was streaming it was like 139 hours and counting, and it's like okay that's not going to be me, but that shows you sort of like the breadth of like where you can go with it. I had this really good fight where you know those enemies that like are hidden in a big bush. And then
they like pop up out from the ground and they
yeah,
charge
and then,
you.
And then they yes, charge yes, you yes. and then you attack them and then like a little worm like appears and you have to track down that worm. And I encountered a boss one of those
yes.
where the way – and this is part of like when we were talking about like taking lessons from Dark Souls as opposed to explicitly copying Dark Souls. And to be fair, like Hollow Knight explicitly takes certain things from
yes.
the Dark Souls games, but like there are some like larger concepts and lessons it's playing with that aren't so like just transposed from one thing to another. And like this one of the things I'm learning as I'm playing the game more and more is like the way it's much more explicit about teaching you like certain techniques through the enemy encounters than Dark Souls ever is. Like Dark Souls
yeah.
is teaching that in sort of like a really broad sense, like but it's not usually that like in a specific encounter is meant to elicit like a specific sort of like lesson for the player. You're just like learning those as you're putting things together. I mean, there are exceptions to that rule, but it's like Hollow Knight has very specific instances where it's like, hey, this encounter is communicating a highly specific technique
right.
that it wants you to learn. And this one has this like sort of giant bush creature charging at you very, very fast. To the point, and unlike the smaller versions of it, when you attack it, it doesn't explode and then expose the tiny worm. It just keeps charging,
it keeps coming
at
you. Yeah,
and
you, can kind of hold it off, but it will hit you because it doesn't. It's almost like it has like not super armor from a fighting game, but something like it, where like you cannot halt it in its tracks in the same way.
No,
and
if you attack it straight on, you're probably going to get hit in the process, and so maybe, and you're probably on one hit not going to get enough mana to
right.
heal yourself, and so it's going to be like a net negative. Like you're not going to be making the sort of progress that you need to actually survive the fight, even if you manage to get a hit off. And then the other version of the other technique that enemy has is that it'll jump into the sky and then kind of come down at a 45 degree angle. And what I started picking up, like, you know, I managed to finish that fight the first time, but I really wasn't, like, making any progress at first, and I wasn't being able to get many attacks, and I was just kept jumping over, and I realized about halfway through, like, oh, like, I've been, like, wholly underutilizing the fact that you can both attack in the above you and below you.
Yes,
100%. Prior to that, you don't really, like, the game doesn't force you into a position where you need to be attacking above and below, and what you end up finding is that, oh, if you jump over and attack downwards, where you don't lose momentum. Like, you can jump over and, like, you kind of bounce. So you, like, you actually get some, you kind of play with the gravity and, like, keep your character moving in a direction as opposed to, like, hitting down and then you fall and then you're going to get hit in the process. So I realized, like, oh, I can jump over, I can bounce, get an attack in, bounce over. And then when the enemy comes at a 45 degree angle, I can basically stay in my position where I'm at and just poke up and I'll get a hit. And then all of a sudden, the fight became trivial. because the game wants you to learn these two things. And once you've learned, oh, hit up and hit down, this is the way the fight's supposed to go. You've learned like proper application of a technique that will pay dividends going forward, both like retroactively and like, you know, the encounters you're gonna have in the future. And two, the game essentially steps aside and says, hey, this fight is actually inconsequential now. Like, you're just going to just coast through to the end because you figured out the trick. And what I like about the fact that it's not just a trick where it's like, ah, like I found the weak point and then, you know, now the boss is trivial, which is fine. It's fair. Like, that's a totally justified way to structure a boss encounter. But this one in particular is the trick solves the puzzle of the fight, but then also gives you a strategy technique for like things in the future. And it's just like a really smart way of that's taking a lesson for how Dark Souls like bluntly hits you over the head to force you to like learn how to dodge.
And it crafts it down into something a little sharper, a little bit more specific, you know?
Yes.
I love it. You know, it's reminding me a lot of, obviously we talk a lot again about Dark Souls, about Metroid, but there's the thing that the kind of melancholy atmosphere it has reminds me a little bit of something like Nier Automata, especially given the like, ooh, what's up with this NPC? What's going on with this character over here? And like, what's up with the remnants of all these old things? Like, there's a history here. There's a sense of a history. But also like, Super Brother Sword and Sorcery from forever ago, with that same sort of like, there is something grand and mythic here that I know I'm interweaving with, but I can't help but feel like we're walking towards doom, you know, like I'm not the great hero here. And then mechanically, like I'm really enjoying the system of getting the what are they called, the upgrades, the notched the like pins or whatever they're called that you kind of put into for your map, but also the ones that you just equip for yourself that give you just passive bonuses.
Charms.
Yeah, I found like a secret charm seller actually last night, which is exciting.
Ooh.
Yeah, there's like all sorts of shit. I'm like a little bit past, I think, where you are. I've beaten both of the bosses. I'm down in the like mushroomy area. I don't know if you've gotten there yet.
The
jellyfish?
Jellyfish, yes.
Yes, there are some jellyfish there for sure. Those are like bubbles. So there's like, I think there's a fungal area and there's also like a foggy area. I've been to both of those, but I don't have maps for either yet because you buy maps from an NPC who's like in the area and I haven't found. I heard him singing once, but he was separated from me by like a magical force field. And I was upset.
That, like that black like goop that was going from the ceiling to the ground. Yeah, that's what. Oh,
all right, so we were exactly at the same place.
Yeah, like another really sharp, like fun touch of that game is like, yeah. So I think I mentioned this. We talked about the game before, but. When you enter an area that you haven't been to before, you have to purchase a map. And then even once you purchase that map, you need to fill out that map by, you know, going to places and then going to a save location and writing, like doing the physical act of writing it down. But this really, so like when you get to a new area, one of the first things you want to do is try and find a rest point so that you have a checkpoint. See if you can find a travel area that can like let you do the fast travel around the environment and also go back to the surface to buy things. And then three is to try and find this map. And the way the game communicates that you are near the map maker's location is twofold. One, you will hear like a
he's a great, very good hum.
And then two, you will find like little pieces of paper. Like filtered about, like just strewn about in the environment.
I noticed that.
Yeah, like you'll notice like when you enter those areas, you'll just see like little pieces of paper like kind of shoved into the sides of the walls and stuff like that because he's just running around with all these maps. And he's just got too many maps and
he's great. I love him.
It's really those little touches that show the attention to detail that Team Cherry, the developers, like put into the game and all sorts of things that they wouldn't need to, right? You could just put the NPC in. The NPC, just like any other game, could just be there and you stumble upon them. And instead, like, there's all this, like, contextual, like, stuff that's happening around it that just makes it, it helps establish that sense of place, which is also a lesson of Souls that is hard to copy, right? Like, Nioh was a really, really good mechanical riff on Dark Souls. But I played about 10, 15 hours of that game. I did not get a sense of place in the same way. From Nioh. Same with The Surge, which was like, you know, Mecha Souls. Not Mecha in the Austin Walker sense, but you know, you're dealing with like robotics and stuff
like
that.
Robots. Yeah.
And that game also had a really poor sense of place. You were just in a nondescript junkyard. Factory, yeah, junkyard it place. Like, it didn't. You it didn't feel suck, like you were in a world. And, yes, and Hollow Knight exactly. feels like you're in a world. And all sorts of small and big things add up to make that work in the way that part of the reason people are so invested in the lore of the Souls games is not just the way, it's not just item descriptions that link together in clever right. ways. It's how all of that feeds in to a form of storytelling that is both right. the sense of place and the actual, like, sort of literal storytelling that is happening through text or things like that. Like, it all works together to achieve an effect that is not outright copyable, like, or at least have it's you, not something you can just copy and paste.
Have you gotten to the, there's, like, the Grand Subway or whatever it's called, like the Queen's train station or steed station or whatever.
Is it's it like where it's like three levels deep and you yeah, like encounter like an NPC that's like, yo, this place is huge.
Yes, yes, totally. I love that because it's one of those things where you so there's fast travel in this game in certain points. Like each the game is subdivided into map zones where it's like, okay, these are like the caves and this area is like the forested area and this area has the mushrooms in it and stuff, whatever, right? And each one of those has a stag station. That's what it's called. They're called stags, it's like, what if there was like a knight whose job was to carry people around? Is like a big six-legged beetle or something that has chairs on the back, and you get to like the Queen's stag station, and it's like going to a major, it's like going to Grand Central Station or something, and there is just a sense of like, oh yeah, of course this would exist. Like, of course, if there's an underground kingdom, there would be some of these that are not just little subway stops. Some of these would be destinations in their own right. And it felt a little bit like what I wanted from Metro. There's a moment in Metro where you go to, like, the Grand Station. Mm-hmm. And you only kind of see it a little bit in Metro. You only get to, like, you walk past it really quick. And this isn't, like, you know, this isn't a huge bustling city or whatever, because it is still this kind of post-apocalyptic setting where things have gone wrong in this fantasy bug kingdom. But there is still this sense of grandeur and like, oh, I can see what this place would have felt like back then. And now it's just like, you know, this one rando NPC like kicking his legs off the side of one of the levels and kind of hanging out there. And it feels abandoned, but it still feels really magnificent in some way. I really love it. I'm really enjoying it. I'm happy to have something to come back to at night where I'm like, yeah, this is what I want to put a couple hours into. Do you know if the NPCs have stories like in Dark Souls? Like, am I gonna miss anything if I don't? Like, I met a guy who was like, I need to go to the fucking arena. I've met him twice now, and the second time I met him, he yelled at me for taking fast travel. He was like, true warriors don't take. I just want to make sure I'm not gonna miss.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, because definitely, yeah, for people that haven't played the Souls game, like, you traditionally miss the vast majority of like the NPC side quests your first time through the game, which means that I miss most of those forever because it's not like the game doesn't have like a quest journal. It doesn't tell you explicitly like, hey, if you want to see this character again, like go do action X, Y, and Z. A lot of that's like figured out by the community after the fact, so you can make sure you can do as much during your playthrough. But I don't know if the game is my guess would be no. I don't get the sense that it has stuff like that, but I could just as easily be wrong about that. Oh, someone mentioned this in the chat today. Did you know that, so when you go to ride the big, beautiful bugs that like allow you to do fast travel,
yeah,
where they're very cute, they're very yeah. big, I appreciate them fully. If you get down off the platform
yes.
and stand in front of them, you can talk to them? I did not yep. know that. And yeah, they'll give you a bunch of like lore of like the yes. local area.
Oh, I haven't been here. Oh, this town used to hustle and bustle or whatever. You know, they don't speak English. Like, they speak English. You can read the text, but they go like, ooh, ooh.
Oh, the like look, the air to rare mumble speak has been found in Hollow Knight.
Yes.
Most games that have tried to do what Rare did, where like it's kind of cute to have them not actually speak English, is like go
where they're like, in Star Fox or whatever. But here,
it's really good.
It's so good. There's almost a harmony. Not a harmony. That's not the right word. But like there is something about there's something musical and a rhythm and about the sounds that they're making. I love it. It's so good.
It also actually feels one of the more recent ones I came across actually feels like closer to a language. Like it runs like a fine line between
right.
like just wanting to give you some sort of sense of character for like whoever you're talking to, but also doesn't feel just explicitly like gibberish. It does feel like it's pulled. You can imagine it being part of a language that you just don't understand, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't. It reminds me of something explicit, and I'm having a hard time putting my finger on it, but it reminded me of another fantasy game of some kind that had a similar sort of like fictional language. I'm never going to put my finger on it, but there was something else that did this pretty well recently, and it's driving me up the wall that I can't quite remember it, but it's really good. It's a really good fictional, like, they do a lot of, like, communicating personality through it, mm-hmm. where, like, have you met, like, the grumpy knight who is, like...
Oh, the one who you think you're saving, and then it turns out he's pissed that you saved him?
He's a piece of shit. Yeah, exactly, that guy. You can tell that he's a piece of shit, that he's kind of like a grumpy know-it-all, thinks he's hot shit, the way he speaks. I love it. It's really good. All right,
it's actually kind of nice to have NPCs that are a little more straightforward. I like the way that the Souls games handle their sort of, like, oblique storytelling and every character laughing in weird ways and not ever being straightforward about their intentions. Not to say there won't be characters that are not straightforward about their intentions in Hollow Knight, but there is
something... Yeah, I don't trust that witch you meet early on. She knows some shit I don't trust. There's a lot of people I don't trust, but I know I'm supposed to not trust them. It's not just like, well, this is another Souls game, so I shouldn't trust anybody.
I feel like that knight that is upset that you saved him is going to get into some shit again and then be thankful that you saved him.
Yes. Yeah.
That's my prediction.
That's a good prediction. All right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we should do a little bit more of a E3 wrap-up and some Q&A or some question bucket stuff. So we will be right back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, we are back. I hope that I managed to edit that break well. I'm sure it'll be great. I'm sure it'll be fantastic. Patrick, the Jeff Keighley of the Internet
Awards.
The Internet's Jeff Keighley has released the Jeff Keighley Awards. No, actually, the Keighleys are later this year. But the E3 Judges Awards have gone live, and I felt like maybe we should just talk through those. Actually, you thought that. You were the one who was like, a good segment would be, we could just talk through those. And you're right, so we should look at those real quick.
Because We voted on those.
In fact, we voted on those, and I forgot to submit our votes until 2 days ago, because it was one of those things where it was like, I did our initial votes, those all went in. Our initial, like, here's how you build the ballot votes. Then there's a second round, and that request came in the morning on Friday morning, and then Friday was wild because we got streaming late and I just forgot to hit submit, and so Jeff had to follow up with me and was like, Austin, I need those. And I was like, normally it's like, okay, that happens, like, whatever, someone forgets to hit submit, but he was like, we have some ties, we need to break some ties.
So we came in and just knocked some things around.
You know what, we may knock some things around. For instance, no, okay, let's go through this list. Best of Show, Resident Evil 2, which was a shocker for me.
I was not impressed by Resident Evil 2 at E3, but I didn't see enough of it to, like, say a whole... I mean, there's a reason that I didn't spend, like, 45 minutes, like, gushing over it and our E3 podcast, because there just wasn't enough to see. Like, it was an intro to that game. That feels very much fueled by two things. Right. One, like, an intense amount of nostalgia for Resident Evil 2. Which, fair, that's a great game, like an all-timer and survival horror, and arguably just as good as the original Resident Evil for different reasons. Alien-Aliens sort of comparison. That said, it also feels like people went, shit, I can't put Cyberpunk in as my best of show.
Right, well, okay, I can give you the nominees. Here are the other nominees that we had to get voted on for this final vote.
Okay,
so like, yes, you couldn't put in Cyberpunk. The rules of this are they had to be games that were playable for at least 5 minutes at the show.
And playable can mean, because this is how BioShock Infinite was able to be playable, is that you could, as long as you can walk around in a space, that is playable. So
yeah,
like,
it doesn't mean it has to be good.
It stretched pretty far, but CD Projekt Red was not even allowing folks to do that for that game.
For judges, yeah, exactly. Which I, you know, is part of why I'm pretty sure that game's not coming until late 2019, maybe early 2020.
I'm now more convinced that it's 2020 than I was at E3. You know, I would love to be proven wrong. Ship that
Me
game next
too.
Christmas. But
that would be great.
I feel like 2020 is possibly shaping up for what, Starfield and Cyberpunk in the same year? All right,
come
on.
Let's do it.
Bring
Let's
it.
Do
put
it.
Me in a,
Let's go.
Put me in a chamber. Wake me up.
So the other Best of Show nominees: Anthem, Marvel Spider-Man, Resident Evil 2, Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, and Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. And I think it's fascinating that one of that list, one of those is a remake, Resident Evil 2.
Mm-hmm.
One of those is a kind of combination of past games with some new modifications with Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
One of those is a new game, but that is harkening back to something that's well loved in Spider-Man from Spider-Man, like that has very like shades of Spider-Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have two games that are from well-known studios, FromSoft and BioWare, but that are very clearly diverging from their pasts in Anthem and Sekiro. It is fascinating to me that RE2 wins here, partially because it feels like safest is maybe not the right term here, but it feels like it's the one that's walking the line between old stuff you know was good and new stuff you hope is good.
And also
that,
you
like,
know a little bit more of what RE2 is,
yes.
Right? Like, I'm not sure if everyone actually saw the demo for Shadows Die Twice, right? Like, who knows if you played Spider-Man. And so I think RE2 is a little more of like, okay, like, Capcom has shown a history of, like, being able to do, like, not just competent, but, like, really tremendous like revisitations of their past, like RE7 was great.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, like you can see like absent the game, like, you know, like a Cyberpunk that really got people like talking, and Anthem being a game that was more like I originally had, like when I was listing out things, like I put Anthem, I can't remember what I, but like I remember my feeling on that was like, am I putting it here because it was best of show, or am I putting it here because I was so surprised how much I liked it? But if I was to take that part out of it, then I'm still left with a game that I have enormous questions about, and I don't know that Best of Show feels like how I actually felt about that game. Like Best of Show, like it was biggest surprise was Anthem for me. Like, and that's where I ended up thinking about it when I was thinking of the sort of like Best of Show vote.
I believe you voted RE2.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because I did the safer choice.
Yeah. I think I think somebody else voted Sekiro, and I think I voted Sekiro. I think our vote went to Sekiro. But still,
my problem was I was about to put that game for like eight different things, and I was okay, I need to like
zero
like,
in,
ratchet back, and plus judges had a chance to make
touch
sure that
it,
game
make
was
sure
playable,
it played.
Touch
yep.
it, but like
can't talk about it, but.
Yeah, but I didn't play that game, and I obviously like I have a lot of faith in From Software, and
and you believe me when I say that I wanted to vote for Sekiro,
right?
But you saw me play anyway. We should move on. Best original game: the nominees were Anthem, Days Gone, Dreams, Sekiro, and Skull and Bones.
That's a weak lineup.
That's a pretty. I think the thing that's tough there is none of those games are the ones that, like, stole our hearts at E3. Again, I think Sekiro is cool, but even there, it's like, it's a follow-up to a thing in so many ways.
You very much know, like, you may not know the specifics of what it is, but in, like, broad strokes, and that's part of the reason I was sort of fussy on even picking that game, because I don't know if I expressed this on a podcast or it was just to you privately, was that I'm not disappointed that that's what Shadows Die Twice is, but I am also wondering if, like, the kind of game that From Software is now quickly, like, riffing and then, like, spoking out of, like, I'm less surprised than I was in the past, even though I know I'm going to enjoy that game quite a bit. It'll probably be one of my favorite games of next year. But at the same time, I'm not there's nothing. It's not as surprising as I was hoped for. Like I'm in some ways waiting for like what is the next Souls game, but not in like the Souls right. sense, but in the sense of like takes
something
you by
shake
surprise
things up. Right.
And then like comes from left field. Like that's not what Shadows Die Twice is. It's a Souls type game with like riffing around with different mechanics, adding verticality and all that stuff is going to be cool, but it's not the same sort of like paradigm shift that, you know, the Demon Souls and then Dark Souls, you know, capitalized on.
Yeah, totally. Dreams took this, and I think that's definitely the pick that I would make here in terms of it's an original game. It's doing something new. Obviously, it is still riffing on the Little Big Planet stuff that Media Molecule did, but it feels, in this list of action games, Dreams is the one that feels really distinct in its possibility space, and the sort of thing that I want to encourage inside of the industry. Yeah. People should go back, and if you didn't hear me, go back to one of the past episodes that I was after I came back from the pre E3 Judges Week in May. Go back and try to listen to that episode because I went in deep with my demo there. I wish Dreams had been on stage at Sony because there's a 20-minute demo of that I think would blow people's minds, and I wish they had given some space to that at the actual show. Best console game nominees: Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Dreams, Marvel Spider-Man, Resident Evil 2, Sekiro, and Super Smash Ultimate. Best console game is such a weird, best console versus best PC thing is such a weird subdivide. But Spider-Man wins here, and I think that it's weird. Like, I don't. What's that mean? What does best console game mean for you?
Best console game means that when you voted for your best of show, you went, okay, but I also really like Spider-Man. Where's, another spot on that list that I can, that's honestly how, that's how the thought process usually works on this. It's like, okay, I voted for RE2. Like, could I, conceivably, there's no reason that you can't just put, logically, RE2 is my favorite game of the show. Thus, it also was my favorite console game, my favorite PC game, right? Like, that's how that should work if you're following, the specific logic. But in reality, what you end up going is I used my vote for RE2 on Best of Show. I want to try and sprinkle out some appreciation for other games that I liked. And so I voted for Spider-Man as well because I did really like the swinging in that game.
Right.
In a way that was okay, this seems really rad. I'm excited to play more of this. So that's my guess on how that ended up at that spot. And Anthem is weird because it's that's a PC game too. So it's also best console.
I'm gonna try to play that on PC. Ideally,
RE2 is also gonna be on PC. That's probably where I'll play that.
right. I think for the voting thing, it had to be games that showed on that given console specifically. So I think we played Anthem on Xbox One. What did we play Anthem on?
It was an Xbox One controller, at least.
So it must have been on the Xbox One dev kit, because it's under a console game and not PC. No, wait. It's under PC game, so that must have been on a PC. That makes sense. Let's just jump to those, I guess. Anthem, Battlefield 5, Metro Exodus, Rage 2, Total War, Three Kingdoms. I thought this was going to be... there's a certain sort of, when I vote for best PC game, there is something in me that's it has to be a Metro, it has to be a Rage, it has to be a Total War, it has to be a PC-ass PC game. But Anthem ended up winning here, which again felt like the thing you're saying. I'm and also I liked Anthem, so let's make sure it has an award too.
Yep. I mean, it's a problem. It's difficult to craft award categories. There's a reason that we do really strange ones because it feels more in the spirit of wanting, essentially we come at our awards constructing them from okay, here's all the games we really like this year, how do we find ways of recognizing them? Because arbitrary categories like this, you end up running into people then having to do that anyway, where it's games don't end up getting all the accolades that would necessarily make sense for how the list is constructed, but people don't want to necessarily vote for. If Cyberpunk was applicable, it probably would have ran away with a ton of these. It probably would have gotten best console, best PC game.
Right.
Yes, that'll probably be next year when that is in a more playable state. But,
or you know what? I hope not. I hope next year we're all surprised by something just as much as we were surprised by Cyberpunk.
Sure,
That's the dream, right? Every year you walk away going whoa, I can't believe X was so good. Best VR, AR game, which is a weird one because I definitely didn't play most of these. I didn't play Astrobot Rescue Mission or Derecine. I played Echo Combat and I played Tetris Effect. And I didn't even get near Trover Saves the Universe. because I don't even know what that is. That's the Justin Roiland game. Oh, where he's just doing the
bad trailer.
Tetris Effect won that. I'm not too surprised. That game is really great. Mm-hmm. It's from, you know, a team that we know has done really great stuff like Rez and Lumines. And, you know, anytime you give Tetsuya Mizuguchi VR, some cool shit's going to come out of it. And that seems to be what happened here. I'm not surprised to see that do so well. Best hardware peripheral, the Neo Geo Mini, the Pokeball Plus, Starlink Battle for Atlas, the Vantage controller for PS4, and the Xbox Adaptive controller.
I would have been very upset if anything other than what won.
Which was the Xbox Adaptive controller. That was the right call. That's a cool thing. You know, that's a cool thing because I brought it up when I brought it up with Reggie in my interview with Reggie. He was like, yeah, it's a cool thing. You know, he didn't just say, we don't like to comment on what our competition is doing. I mean, the Nintendo Xbox relationship is very clearly getting closer and closer every day. So very curious to see. One of the rumors I saw people starting to talk about is whether or not we could see the Xbox Adaptive Controller start to run on the Switch sometime in the future. And I would like that quite a bit.
Oh, because, yeah, it's just like it's just a USB thing.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, that would fix a lot of problems.
That plus system-wide button remapping would be really cool. Those are the two things I would like to see from the Switch. Next up is best action game, Anthem, Battlefield 5, Call of Duty Black Ops 4, Metro Exodus, and Rage 2. And Anthem won again, and I think that again speaks to like that behind-the-scenes, hands-on demo being such a good-feeling thing, especially compared to like Metro, I think, is a game that I think that the hands-on demo that I had at pre-E3 was just like so busted that it undercut that for me. And then like it's a bunch of stuff where I felt... I know what a good first-person shooter feels like. I know what a good Battlefield feels like. I know what a good Call of Duty feels like. Anthem felt fresh in terms of its gameplay. And that's good. I'm happy again to see that stuff rewarded. Mm-hmm. Best Action Adventure, AC Odyssey, Spider-Man, Resident Evil. I almost said Resi. I almost said Resi too. Resident Evil 2, Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, Shadow of the Tomb Raider, and Tom Clancy's The Division. This stuff gets so weird for me of like, what is action adventure? What is RPG? What is action? How is Spider-Man not whatever? How is The Division at this point not an RPG? There's skill trees. How is Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which now has a dialogue wheel, not an RPG?
Video game genres are bad.
Yeah, they're basically bad. They're all flying apart. In any case, Spider-Man won for best action adventure. Sure. Which, you know, that's or like how did Anthem, which again we know has won. We know it has.
Tons of adventure elements. It's also an RPG.
And it has RPG elements. Yeah, totally. But like also, one of the things in the initial email from Keeley was like, what makes it an action-adventure game is third-person action variants that include action, but also traversal and puzzle solving. Okay. And that's it. You know?
I mean, Anyway.
Video game genres
are bad.
Video game genres are bad. I'll just blow through these really quick so we kind of get a bigger picture thing. So Spider-Man won that, and then RPG was Divinity Original Sin 2, Dragon Quest XI, which is weird because that's only on there because it's coming out on console this year. Yeah. Exactly. Dragon Quest XI, Echoes of an Elusive Age, which is a great subtitle. Kingdom Hearts 3, Octopath Traveler, and Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Pokemon Let's Go Eevee, with Kingdom Hearts 3 winning. It had to, right? It had to win this. Yeah. This is its year. Let them have this.
Well, next year is its year, but
Best fighting game, Dead or Alive 6, Jump Force, Soul Calibur 6, or Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
At least there were games in this category this year. Some years it's just like, yo, there was one.
One of the rules for submitting your ballot suggestions is you have to have at least three things. And if you don't even bother. Like, which I've always kind of been like, well, wait, but what if I really liked the one racing game I played and want to, like, shout it out? And I guess that the idea, one of the ways I started to interpret this is like, listen, somebody cares enough about racing games to put together the ballot for it. Like, someone cares enough about sports games to be like, yeah, these are the three sports games there. Let that person suggest those. Those will go on the ballot, and then you can vote on them when it's time to actually vote. In any case, Smash won Best Fighting Game. which I think Soul Calibur felt a little bit better to me, all said, but that's just, that's my history speaking. That's my love of Soul Calibur and Soul Edge over my love of my interest in Smash, you know? Like, right. Oh yeah, I'm interested in Smash, but I love Soul Calibur. So, I mean,
also, those are, more or less all those games are derivative, like, yep. sequels, and I don't yep. necessarily mean that's pejorative as much as, like, basically what won out there was probably just familiarity with yeah. one IP over another, whereas like if this year there had been some sort of like really unexpected fighting game that was like surprising and different, that probably would have ran away with it just yeah. because it would have been different. So ultimately those categories kind of come down to like, are you a Tekken fan, are you a Dead or Alive, you know, like that's just kind of how that stuff ends up breaking down.
Totally. Best racing game, F1 2018, Forza Horizon, Team Sonic Racing, The Crew 2, Trials Rising. And that was Forza. And best sports game, FIFA, Mario Tennis Aces Pro Evo 2019. And that was FIFA. That was one of those, this is one of those ones where, again, it feels like, look, The Crew 2 is already out, or was going to be out immediately. Mario Tennis Aces is about to be out pretty much immediately. And it defaults to, like, those are the biggest ones in terms of catching. Rather, Forza and FIFA are the ones that have like the biggest built-in audiences and are like aesthetically and design-wise the big bucket that you're going to fall into. You know what I mean? I feel like those are the mass audience games. I guess Mario Tennis falls into that a little bit, but FIFA just has such a huge audience that at this point it's like you can't ignore that. You know, this is those wins are always weird for me because it's like, oh yeah, the biggest AAA game on this list won. No shit.
Right.
So yeah. Best strategy game, Mutant Year Zero, Road to Eden, which I didn't know was a strategy game. I guess it's a tactics game, so maybe that's it. Maybe there's not. Mm. I don't know. Total War Three Kingdoms, Two Point Hospital, which is like the follow-up to Theme Hospital. And Wargroove, which I'm mad I didn't play. I realized it was at the Xbox event, and I just never got around to it.
I saw it, and then it has a cool look. I feel like that game has to be out like soonish, but maybe not. I felt like that way for like the last year and a half. So
that is like the Fantasy Advance Wars that Chucklefish is making.
Yeah, the publisher is not the developer of Stardew Valley, but they are becoming known for a certain type. Yes. Of game, like they also have the like Harry Starbound. Potter RPG that's coming out.
Yeah, that game looks great.
Yeah, it looks.
I'm excited for that.
But and both, I mean, they are going after an aesthetic that I am very into. And you know, if they haven't had a,
they also published Risk of Rain. They also published Starbound.
They have a good taste.
They do.
So.
They do. There's a game called Witch Marsh by them that is like a co-op platform or like action RPG where you go into the heart of the swamplands of Massachusetts in the 1920s to fight cultists and Cthulhus, which is my new tabletop role-playing game, Cultists and Cthulhus. It looks dope. It looks so good. I'm super excited for that. In any case, Wargroove is like, I say fantasy Advance Wars and not just Fire Emblem, because it doesn't seem to be as focused on like characters as RPG characters as much as it is about like armies and units, you know, and producing new. It's just a little bit more Advance Wars than Fire Emblem in that way. It has a great look though, so I'm very curious about that. In any case, that didn't win. Total War did, so I don't know why I'm jabbering on about Wargroove because we didn't talk about it. That's why. Because I'm mad I didn't find my way to playing it. In any case. Three Kingdoms won, and Rob has written about that. If you haven't read Rob's piece on why he is, carefully excited about Three Kingdoms, then you should go do that over on the site. Best family/social game, Dreams, Lego DC Supervillains, Pokemon Let's Go, Overcooked 2, and Mario Tennis Aces. I should note briefly that Natalie and I played a bunch of Lego, or Natalie played and I watched her play a bunch of Lego DC Supervillains, and we made a very goofy Lego DC Supervillain character. We have footage of that. I don't know if we're ever going to do anything with that footage, because there's a ton of footage of that game out there. But that seemed like a fun time. I would have enjoyed that as a kid. In any case, Overcooked 2 won, and I really liked Overcooked 2. being able to throw ingredients is such a game changer. And some of the levels do some really fun and interesting things now. We had one that was on an airship, and then where we were making, you know, I forget exactly what we were making. We were making, let's just say, pizzas. And then we crashed, something popped the hot air balloon, and so we crashed down into a conveyor belt sushi place. And so then we were making pizzas and also sushi. And it was a really dynamic level that really threw things into chaos in a really fun way. So I'm excited to see Overcooked 2. Best online multiplayer, Anthem, Battlefield 5, Call of Duty Black Ops 4, Destiny 2, Forsaken, Skull and Bones, and The Division 2. That collection of games is just such a...
Yeah.
I'm a little fatigued looking at that collection of names. Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It just feels like such a known... Like, I can compare that to best strategy game. Mutineer Zero, Total War Three Kingdoms, Two Point Hospital, Wargroove. Compare that even to best family game of Dreams, Lego DC Supervillains, Pokemon Let's Go, Overcooked 2, and Mario Tennis Aces. And it's just like, there's a Anthem, Battlefield 5, Call of Duty Black Ops 4, Destiny 2 Forsaken, Skull and Bones, Tom Clancy's The Division 2.
Well, it's just like none of the... It doesn't... Those games are just games that have multiplayer. And it's just, like, It just feels very perfunctory. And I'm not saying those games aren't doing multiplayer well.
Right.
But, you know... There's nothing in there that goes like, right, like this is doing something like really right, unique with like players being connected to one another.
I want Dreams for online multiplayer games. Like, not literally, I mean, also literally, but what I want is like, I want that thing that's like, whoa, I can't believe that's a really cool, unique thing to do in multiplayer.
Right.
You know, in any case, Battlefield 5 wins here. And I mean, that game sounds like it's going well, or I know that there's the closed alpha happening now, or maybe that already happened. I haven't been following close enough. I'd like to see some of that. I'm excited to play that game, actually, but I just wish nothing I saw at that event like made me super excited for it or made me feel like this is like a crapshoot. You know what I mean? Like, all of these are online multiplayer games. Any of them could have won this, it feels like. Best independent game, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, Outer Wilds, Overcooked 2, Sable, and Tunic. This is an exciting category.
Yeah.
A lot of unknowns here. A lot of cool things. Ori wins, which not a bummer to me because that game looks great.
I really like that game. And Ori and the Blind Forest is one of the best sort of like, you know, if you like Hollow Knight, like go back and somehow you didn't play Ori, like that game is a very terrific, more traditional style Metroid game. Also, like more challenging than you would expect, but not nearly on the level of Hollow Knight. But I sort of look at Ori and go, oh, that's basically like a first party Microsoft game.
Like,
I think Sable more than, and like 100%. Even if they all fall into the same category, it's like, well, all right, like if Valve had announced Half-Life 3 best independent game, Half-Life 3, right? You know what I mean? Like, it seems to go a little bit against the spirit of the category.
Right, like the rest of these games are small teams or single people, right? Like,
right.
Sable is two or three developers plus a writer and the musician. Tunic is Andrew Schuldeis plus someone who's doing some, like, sound effects, Kevin from Powered Up Audio, plus a soundtrack person. But Andrew Schuldeis is doing level design, character design, programming, you know, combat design, all that stuff. And so there's, like, independent is such a broad category here that it feels tough to be, like... And this is where we can get into conversations about polish. Same with, like, Sable is a gorgeous game made by a few people, and it's nowhere near as polished as Ori or Overcooked, but like, you know, it's three or four people, and it's not a sequel, so it's a weird category. But you know, Ori looked great, so I'm not gonna shit talk it too much here. And then best ongoing game is the last voted thing, and that is Destiny 2, Forsaken, For Honor, Fortnite, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, and Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Siege. Unsurprisingly, given the year it's had, Fortnite won. But I don't like it winning here because it didn't... All it did was come out on Switch at E3, right?
Yeah. I did vote for Fortnite because I...
Thanks, Patrick.
I considered that to be more of a vote holistically about Fortnite. And, like, I don't know if you followed what happened with the rocket launch
that
stuff.
That shit was dope, yes.
Right, and I think that stuff just speaks to...
If that had happened at E3,
Fortnite's operating on its own sort of timeline, and so I sort of stepped, like, took a step back, and rather than, like, what did Epic Games announce about Fortnite E3, and was more like, what is actually the game? If E3 is just sort of like a, like, at least for this category, for me, it felt like more of like a, sort of like a mark in the sand over, like, where we are at. Like, Fortnite, I think, far and away, is doing, like, whatever you think of the style of gameplay it has, like, there is nothing out there doing anything close in terms of, like, community storytelling in the right way that Fortnite is. Like, if you don't play the game, go look up, like, the Rocket stuff that was happening. I'm bummed I missed and did not watch it as it happened in real time.
It was really cool.
Like, a real special moment. And I love reading the stories about how, like, the moment where this rocket explodes and goes into the atmosphere and appears to be starting to shatter reality, like, happened in matches where people were supposed to be fighting each other, and someone just set the record for most amount of kills in a game by just going around and killing people while they were trying to watch this rocket explode, which is such a shitty thing to do,
but it wasn't just funny. It was not just going around and killing people. There had been a viewing party set up on top of a giant ramp, the biggest ramp I've ever seen in that game, and someone just dropped out the very foundation of it and killed 47 people in a single match.
It's so funny.
If you haven't seen that footage, go find that footage of the rocket going off. It's really cool, and one of my favorite things that they do is the rocket takes off. It breaks off its, like, fuel cell, basically, the lowest, like, the launch part of the rocket, falls into Anarchy Acres, and now that just spawns in Anarchy Acres on every match, like, it's just there. And then it kind of, like, goes up, and then it turns around, and it laser focuses in on Twisted Towers, which is the place that's been rumored to be blown up. The comet was supposed to land there, the missile was supposed to land there, and and it dives straight down, like, lasers, like, line up to land at Twisted Towers, and the last second it gets teleported away, and then, like, kind of sweeps through the whole map, like, across the sky, and then eventually gets aimed up into the sky, and it explodes and cracks a hole in the ceiling, in the roof, like, as if it's like a Truman Show style skybox, which is weird and cool. So I'm very curious to see where they go from here. It's a great tease for whatever's next for them. And the fact that it just happened simultaneously across every game at that time is really fucking cool.
Yes.
Like, if you were playing Fortnite at 1:30 Eastern time on Saturday or whatever it was, that you saw that. And that's a really cool way to do live events in a battle royale, in a big multiplayer game like that. They're treating it like an MMO in some ways. Also, I played that game for the first time on Friday in a while, and they've added a bunch. There's, like, just stuff to eat on the ground now.
Good. And
there are rocks to eat that give you super jumps.
Well, it's cool. those were there starting with the superhero arc.
Gotcha.
Maybe they're more common amongst them. But yeah, like, it makes it so you, like, can kind of, like, have the gravity of, like, walking on the moon or something like that. So you
there's,
can,
sticky bombs now. There's all sorts of stuff that I had not seen at all that I got to play. I was like, oh, wow, this stuff's all cool. So yes, I think that you make a good case for it being a great ongoing game at the very least. And then finally, special commendations for graphics. Cyberpunk 2077, Last of Us Part 2, and Ghost of Tsushima all won a special commendation. Special commendation games don't need to be playable. So unsurprisingly, all of the other games you're excited for won these. Special commendation for sound, The Last of Us Part 2 won. And then special commendation for innovation, Cyberpunk 2077 won. Nice work to those.
Yeah, I mean, I think I voted Last of Us on graphics because whatever my complicated feelings are about, like, that game and that studio, like, the sheer technical achievement of, like the kiss was, a moment in, like, video games. Like, beyond, like, the fact that, like, you know, there's that sort of, like, representation in a game on a huge stage. Like, just the fact that it was, like, convincing and hot was, like, like, this is a big moment in, like, games' ability to, like, convince you of, like, a certain feeling. And so that was sort of why I ended up falling on that one. I mean, Cyberpunk looked – the crowds are really good in that game.
The crowds look really good in that game. I should note the crowds in Hitman also looked really good. So good crowds and games coming up in the future. All right, that is it for those awards. I think, with some remove now, I'm really happy with that E3. I think some of those demos are the best demos I've seen. I mean, obviously, people heard me get so excited. Heard us both get so excited.
Well, maybe people heard the demo for Cyberpunk 2077.
Jesus Christ.
That leak stuff like that. Bad.
If you're going to leak it. Don't pretend that it's, like, deep investigative journalism, which is how I've seen it framed by
just because they didn't explicitly
the
say, oh, when they, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole. Just bad. I disagree.
Yeah, I disagree. I want to go and I want to go down the rabbit hole a little bit because I do think I do think it's fair to so. You know, I'm not trying to start a fight. You know, I guess that's what I'll say is I'm not trying to start a fight. People do a thing. You do a thing. You did the thing. You work out the relationship that you work out with the publisher. That's fine. But I think that there is – I think that it's fair to criticize the state of games journalism. I think we do it kind of often.
Sure.
But what we try to do more than that is do the sorts of games journalism that we think is important. We ask the questions that we think haven't been asked by other people. We try to run stories that we think are important. And that is our best way of doing it. I genuinely think that trying to equate leaking the audio of a game demo, a behind closed doors game demo, to
when you
like,
had clear right. like outlined by the people what the parameters of the meeting
were
right, like when I do an off the record conversation with someone,
which we do all the time,
just because I hear something juicy, it's like, haha, fuck you, I'm putting this out on Twitter,
right?
It's like,
but
when
at
the
least,
parameters
here's the thing that's wild, it's like even in those situations there are things where it's like you would have
I've heard
the
something
record.
Off the record and then I'll go, hey, like, this is actually really interesting, can we negotiate this to something
yes.
that I could then publish? But that is a negotiation with a source in a context where you are going back and forth with that person. And like, this is a meeting where, like, their leak happened in bad faith, I believe,
yeah.
because at the top, in the recording itself, from what I understand, I've
yes.
listened to it, like, they repeated the mantra that they put in our meeting, which is like, hey, like, please, like, no, they said no recording. And what they don't mean is, like, you can't record it if you want to, like, someone asked in our meeting, can I record audio so I can get quotes? And they
yes.
said, yes.
Yes.
And like the good faith interpretation of that is that, look, like, don't be an asshole. Like, record this so that you can like write the stories that are informed and have everything that you need. But like, no recording does like that. There's a that's pretty clear what they're saying there, even if they didn't have you sign an NDA.
Even more fundamentally than that, if the case is, and the case that I've seen brought up by fans and by gamers is, you shouldn't do closed room behind closed doors demos unless you're going to show those to the public, because then all you're doing is turning reporters into arms of the PR machine, etc. Doing an audio recording of just the demo is just that exact thing. If you're just listening to someone say, all right, so here's how we made this dope game.
You
for
released
40
their
minutes,
trailer in audio form.
Well, like, it, without the ability to even see it. You know what I mean? Like, it's literally, I would almost respect more the person who surreptitiously recorded the actual video.
Right.
Because then
yes.
at least they'd be saying, like, look, we think this game has some issues. We want people to, we've heard a lot of people talk about it, have hyped it up. But here, you can see the frame rate isn't, like, and like, fuck that. I don't give a fuck about that anyway. But there are people who really care about that shit, so there'd at least be some degree of consistency there. But just releasing 40 minutes, 50 minutes of someone being like, well, in this segment, what you're going to see is how we do cyberware, and it's really cool, is not actually doing anything to offer a counter to the story that the developers were trying to tell about their game. It's just letting them tell it on your platform. And so it's very frustrating to see that shit.
CD Projekt Red specifically has a very understandable reason to not want to show their game in a really early state because of, like, go do, like, this was not a minor thing. Like, the whole, like, downgrade argument over an early demo of The Witcher 3 that was shown and
right.
video footage was released because the specs for the Xbox One and PlayStation 4 had not been, like, figured out. It hadn't been solidified. So, like, the visual render that they showed publicly had to be adjusted once they were making a multi-platform game,
right.
in addition to just the sort of things that happen as a game is developed. And time again, there are lots of people who understand this. There are lots of people who are informed, understand that games shown early are going to change. But unfortunately, there is a huge culture on YouTube, on Reddit, on other places, in which people have proven time and time again, they are not responsible enough to see this information, to give developers leeway to change their minds, to realize that things have compromised occur through the course of development.
Right. That the tech doesn't come out the way you thought, et cetera.
Right.
Yeah.
And CD Projekt Red just had this happen with The Witcher 3. Like, they went through a firestorm as that game came out. It sold just fine. It like rose above all that stuff. But it is disingenuous to pretend that this studio didn't just go through something where people themselves acted in bad faith over their previous release. And so it is completely understandable that they would not want to entertain a game that is at least a year and a half out, possibly 2.5 years out, where they want to deal with setting the table for that already. And so that context is important for this developer specifically because they have had that kind of, so I am sympathetic to that argument from their perspective. Even if they didn't make it, I think it is implicit in the way the game was presented.
Totally. And I want to be ultra clear here that there are situations in which if someone says, like, all right, so no recordings of this, etc., you can do it for background, whatever. And then what they proceed to do is be like, so we think that black people are lesser and inferior. And we also think that crunch is super good for the industry, actually. And also I'm embezzling all the money. I drove here in a Ferrari today, which I embezzled from taking from the 401ks of our employees. There are times at which, like, real journalism does require you to step on some fucking toes and burn some bridges. 100%.
And also fuck product marketing, right? Like, historically in my reporting past, I have not done a lot of, like, X game is in development because I don't think you... I think it's totally fair, sort of story to story. But generally, I have found that, like, I try to, you know, choose my battles over that stuff to be, like, stuff that I find to be, like, very useful to players from, like, so, for example, like, the PlayStation 4 Pro.
That
right?
is exactly
like
the best example, because I think, yeah, we're
so
in the same place there.
My argument on putting that out there, other than on its face, it was interesting that there was going to be a mid-generational upgrade. I think that is newsworthy in and of itself. But let's say you take that part out and go, well, they were going to announce it anyway. Like, why get in front of that? Well, I think there is a completely credible argument to be made that if you might have questioned whether you were going to go out and buy, if you're going to go buy a PlayStation 4, but in a couple of months a PlayStation 4 Pro was coming out,
100%.
And you were willing to spend a little more money, like, it is to the consumers, and I use consumer in a very specific, like, descriptor in this instance, that is, it is to their benefit to have that information up front in a way that betrays the product marketing, but is better for, like, how they're going to spend their money. And so publishing that, yes, it was newsworthy and interesting from a historical perspective, but, like, I think the better argument is that actually it was useful for how people were going to spend their money, even if it kind of stomped on their initial sort of, like, rollout plans. And, like, that's why I felt completely fine sort of spoiling that. While at the same time being sympathetic to, as someone that is a fan, does like getting, like, going into a press conference and, like, being
surprised
by
things.
Like, I do get that, but I think you have to look at it on a sort of a story-by-story basis, because I don't think it's one, not true that you have to completely respect product marketing just because that's, like, the company's prerogative. At the same time, there are instances where, like, maybe it wasn't, you know, maybe, like, those developer. I also am sympathetic to developers who are working really hard and have a specific way they want to roll out their game because they're excited to roll it out in a specific way. And I'm not necessarily out there just to spoil everyone's plans just to be a spoil sport.
Right. So, yeah, that is our brief diatribe, detour into this subject.
Yeah, you know what? I like Shane Snyderfield, and I like all the work he's done in the past. So, but this is just something that specifically in the explanation for why this happened, like, my name was invoked, and so I took specific issue with it, and having some of the, and my work's not impeachable. You know, unimpeachable either, right?
Up, like, 100%.
So I'm not trying to put myself on some sort of pedestal, but at the point where some of the work that I do is kind of, like, put alongside that, like, I would say specifically, like, I wouldn't have made that choice. Especially the better argument for releasing that would have been, yo, CD Projekt is lying about, like, there's something you're not understanding.
100%.
And at that point, then it would have been like, look, like, the journalists that are raving about this, like,
they're leaving this thing out. Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
And I think that's the the argument for leaking it at that point, because it's not just about a back of the room smoking cigars sort of thing. They closed the bar before 5 minutes before we got in there. We didn't even get our free beer.
I didn't get a free beer. I had to take a warm soda that I found hidden.
I told Austin, I was like, when I came to Witcher 3, they served you beer. I bet they're going to do that here too. And I got Austin all excited about it.
Like,
and then
man,
we didn't get our collusion
beer. I'm not colluding with anybody. They don't have no collusion, no Kahlua. You know?
God, well, at least damn. We found the title of the episode.
There it is. All right. There's like a very quick dip into the bucket. You want to save those for Friday? What do you want to do?
Let's do one.
We
said we were going to do 30 minutes. We're already at 60 minutes.
We're
we
already
might
at
as well
60 minutes.
So
welcome to us. Welcome to us.
Yep.
All right. This one comes in, and this maybe I don't know if either of us will have an answer for it, but I think it's a nice letter, so I wanted to share it. Yeah. This one comes in from Cameron, this one comes in from Cosmoid.
Cameron Kunzelman.
Cameron Kunzelman says, I hate Mad Max. Dear Waypoint, I have recently had a new experience with games in sharing Captain Spirit with my dad. He has always loved adventure games and enjoyed Life is Strange. When he got back to me, he said he understood why I liked Captain Spirit, but all he could feel was regret. I hadn't even thought of my childhood, where he stayed in my room drunk playing Mario Golf until 12 a.m., or his bouts of pancreatitis from the drinking. When I told him I was sorry, I hadn't meant that, he responded that it made him happy, because it means I might have forgiven him. This led to us talking about something we've always avoided. I just wonder if any of you had similar experiences sharing media with a parent or a partner, and how important telling stories like this is to facilitating those tough dialogues, which is a really great story. I really love that this game could help bring that stuff together. I'll say that I had a very brief but similar experience with a cousin of mine. One of my cousins died by suicide a couple of years ago, which was really out of nowhere, and it was really hard for the family. And at the funeral, he was young. He was like, you know, just out of high school, and was someone who was dealing with depression but was not seeking treatment and did not – I think a lot of people in the family had no idea. It's from my stepdad's side of the family, and a very kind of traditional, like old-school Italian family – that has never been really open about those sorts of mental health issues. But his younger brother and I ended up talking at the funeral. This was right after we launched, I think it was right after, it was either right before we launched Waypoint or right after, I think it was maybe like a year into me being a Giant Bomb, maybe, actually. Because I remember telling him I was thinking about going to Vice and blah, blah, blah. In any case, he was like into games. I grew up playing games with them all the time. Like the first time I played Smash was at their house, right? It was at their mom's house. And he was like, "Oh, so what have you been playing recently?" And I think I must have still been a Giant Bomb actually, because we just finished doing Life is Strange. And I was like, "Oh, I just finished Life is Strange. I really liked that." And he was like, "Yeah, it really helped me a lot." And it took me a second to realize what he meant, but then I remembered that one of the, I think the second episode deals with depression and suicide and suicidal ideation and stuff like that. And it was one of these moments where I realized I was so grateful for that game to have tried to tackle that stuff. And I don't think it does it perfectly by any means, but I think it does a really decent job of trying to present depression and suicidal ideation as this very complex and very human thing. The character who is considering suicide in that game is not treated as pathological. Like, there's nothing wrong with her. She isn't like a villain, or she isn't framed as being irresponsible or as having, you know, considered or committed a sin or anything like that, you know? And so it was one of those moments where he and I ended up bonding over that literally at the funeral for his brother. And that was like a really heavy thing, but a good one, a good thing to have had happen, you know? Sorry to bring it down, Patrick. Do you have any experience with a partner or a parent and telling important stories via media?
Not nearly as heavy, but I do remember this instance when I was younger. This is probably, I don't know what year it was, but my dad would always hang out in the back room of our house, and he would watch football and TV by himself, and he would do a lot of work back there, and it was just kind of like the spot that he hung out in. And I went back there one night. I think I was either back, I don't know if I was in college or if I had left at that point, but anyway, we were just looking for something to watch, and you know, HBO like does like these, you know, sort of like political adaptations like every couple of years, and they did one called The Special Relationship, which is about like, you know, the US and the UK, and it was specifically about like the post 9/11 stuff. And or no, actually, I think that was a Bill Clinton one, and I can't remember, but anyway, like we just put that on because it was something to put on,
right?
And like actually got us to talk like even vaguely about politics, like
right.
Which is not even like I was very early and sort of like becoming sort of like politically aware, even thinking that like politics was something other than just like something you saw on the news, like
right.
Having opinions. And I don't remember any grand takeaways we had. It was more just I'd never heard my dad even touch on anything like that. And so like that was a moment where like a piece of media like actually gave us a window or sort of like an opening into
yes.
talking about something that like otherwise just never would have come up. There's like
right.
no world where we're going to be sitting around the table and that's just going to be something, unless there was some major event in the news or something that like prompted people to have to discuss it. And even then you'd be talking around it in some way. And so that was like something I appreciated. It was like an opportunity to, that I didn't really understand at the time. I really hadn't thought about it too much until like this question came up and I was like scratching my head at like maybe instances like that. And like, that's one of those that I deeply appreciated where a piece of media was able to act as, and the movie wasn't even that good, but
right.
it like
right.
acted
but it opened
as like a platform.
Opportunity. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally. I think that's a great thing that media can do. You know, I grew up watching movies and TV shows and listening to music with my parents, and it has always been such a cornerstone of my relationship with all of them, with everybody in my you know immediate family. For that reason, where we do end up talking about things you wouldn't otherwise, and that's a huge part of what has you know helped me become a critic and think about the world and all that stuff. And I'm really thankful for that because you know I definitely there are other people in my extended family and I have friends who like don't have any conversations with their parents about the world or about their feelings or whatever. I'm very lucky to have that relationship with them and I take it pretty seriously. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah. And I will say I wrote a review of Captain Spirit last week on the site,
right.
which is a very personal reaction. Like, Shaq and awe. Like there's a story about like parents and kids and
Patrick
has a hot fucking take on it. But you know, that is the world that I live in. And I think Captain Spirit is like truly exceptional. I think it's actually like really, really well done. Like I think they've learned a lot of lessons in how they like not even tiptoe, like just go into like subjects that other games just either don't have the courage to, or I think actually a lot of it is the courage to, because it's easy to fuck up and Life is Strange does fuck it up. But I think part of the reason people appreciate the series and sometimes give it a pass on the parts that it does get wrong are because it's making like a good faith effort to tell stories that lots of other games are not even treading in, certainly at the fidelity and like the sort of like technical aesthetic that Life is Strange is granted by virtue of like the way it's crafted. Like there are all sorts of twine and other games that are, you know, have talked about all sorts of serious issues that you know AAA games you know have slowly found ways to incorporate. But I if you bounced off Life is Strange, even if you aren't interested in Life is Strange 2, I think Captain Spirit is a very, very good self-contained little story that is like charming and funny and interesting and tragic. And it does make me very excited to see what they end up doing with the second one, because they seem to have learned a lot of really meaningful lessons from the first one.
Right. Totally. All right. I think that's going to do it for us today. Patrick, where can people follow you on the internet?
You can follow me, at Patrick Klepek.
Follow me at Austin_Walker. You can follow everything Waypoint does, twitter.com/Waypoint, facebook.com/Waypoint Vice, youtube.com/Waypoint Vice, and all of our live streams over at twitch.tv/Waypoint. Hey, by the way, if all you do is listen to this podcast and you think, I love it when they talk about things that have nothing to do about video games, I'd love to hear the Waypoint crew debate, for instance, whether or not sauce is a food, then you should head over to our YouTube and over to our Twitch.
Is it?
You know, I think a strong case. And look up the recent series we started doing on Twitch called Hot Mic Mondays. Again, the archives have been going up over on YouTube in a pretty timely fashion. It's kind of a morning show. It's kind of a like, hey, I'm going to check my mail and answer some questions from the chat. And you were going to end up looking at Twitter and then getting into an hour-long debate about what sauce is.
Sauce of food?
It could be. It could be. Is it a food? Is it not a food? I don't know. You'll have to listen to the episode and find out.
Okay.
We're trying to figure out a way to get audio to y'all on that. It's a bandwidth thing in terms of not an internet bandwidth thing. There's only 7 days in the week, only 5 work days in the week, and we're doing our best not to push ourselves and crunch this year.
Yeah.
And so that stuff hasn't happened quite yet, but we're going to figure out either a supercut format or something else to make sure that audio does find its way to y'all. It's a matter of just figuring out what the easiest way for that to be is. But so go check that out, because we do a lot of we watch some Disney cartoon intros. We had another we tried to name every Lay's product snack food that there is. It's been a really fun. Joel brought a PowerPoint presentation one day to defend his honor, his Screamo honor. It was a whole thing. In any case, go check that stuff out. It's been fun. As always, shout outs to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. We will be back on Friday for another episode. I won't be. Actually, we won't be, Patrick.
No,
Rob and Danielle will be. And Natalie, maybe. We'll be back to talk to y'all about some video games, probably. Or who knows? We'll see. I'm not going to write the future for them. They can figure out what they want to talk about. It'll be fun. All right, everybody. That's going to do it for us. Peace. We'll be right back.